Hello, Dean.
Hello there, you all right?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
Dean, these are very strange days. How are you and your family? I know you have a little one, but I understand that you've got a very special family these days.
Absolutely, yeah. We went through the fostering route. My missus has a background of it, of her mum doing it for more than 15 years. And, yeah, we took that upon us. And we now have two brothers, Kai, who's 8, and Zach, who's 7. And obviously in between that, we had our own daughter, Ayla, who's almost 2. So action-packed.
I bet it is. And it must be particularly challenging in these days of lockdown.
Yes, must admit, Dave, I've been in goal most of it. balls being pelted at me. Yeah, just trying to, obviously the homeschooling as well is paramount that we've done. But obviously with it being Easter holidays now, it's more games and trying to be creative as much as we can in the garden.
Well, good for you. Dean, thank you for taking the time. I'd very much like to look back on your career. And, you know, the term fan favourite can be overused, but I think it definitely applies with yourself. You had such a special relationship with the faithful at Brisbane Road.
Yeah, I think since I walked through the door from day one, it was a relationship that just got stronger and stronger. And yeah, I've got some classes as friends that I keep in contact down there. I come to games as much as I can. Yeah, you know, it's a club where I really enjoyed my time and really felt that they took me in. And, you know, no coincidence, that's where I played my best football.
But your career started, your form started, and of course your career started with Brighton and Hove Albion.
Yes, started off at Brighton, yeah, signed at their Centre of Excellence at the age of 7 and worked my way through and made my debut and ended up playing, I think it's roughly around about 160 games for my sort of hometown club, I suppose, which was challenging, but obviously the very rewarding to be able to go through the youth system and play so many games in the first team.
And they were at the Withding Stadium in those days?
Yes, unfortunately, yeah. They're not the fantastic stadium they've got now, but yes, the running track round, it was a bit unique. Yeah, at the time it was, you know, my only target as a boy, you know, training through the Centre of Excellence was to get on that turf and play football. So to be able to have done that was, you know, something I look back on fondly.
And what were your particular memories and the highlights from your time with the Seagulls?
I think obviously your debut, you'll never forget, your first goal, playing under some old school managers as they would be classed as now, but obviously from
who were they, Dean?
So at Brighton I would have had Mickey Adams, Mark McGee, I had Dean Wilkins, Martin Hinchwood, who used to be involved as well, and obviously Russell when I first met Russell was at Brighton, and obviously from then we struck a fantastic friendship. We obviously still talk now, and yeah, very glad that I got to meet him because he's a very special man.
And at Brighton, in many ways, he laid foundations for the success was to follow. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. I think we were struggling at the time, and they called it the Great Escape because we had, I remember, an injuries list longer than God knows, but we were really struggling. And he had to throw in some new team players. He had to adjust to it, and I think that was the first year, and in the second year, I think he left Brighton in a better place, and you'd like to think that you know, some Brighton fans now still see that was sort of a pivotal moment that sort of led them on the way, and obviously, you know, where they are now is absolutely fantastic. The stadium, the training facilities they've got. So I think Russell's, you know, I spoke to Russell about it. He likes to think that, yeah, he helped, you know, on their way.
And it was 2010, wasn't it, that Russell took you to E10?
Yeah, I remember it vividly. I got the train down. Dave, as you know, I don't drive, so I got the train down, and he met me. he won't mind me saying, we did have a pint in Leighton Technical. And
he was off in there, wasn't he?
Yeah. And we made our way to the stadium, and I met Kevin Nugent, I remember, and Lindsay and Ada. He didn't really have to sell it to me. As soon as I walked onto the pitch, I just thought, oh, it was an instant feeling of, I think I'll enjoy my time here. And he helped out vividly. He helped me find a flat. He's very good like that. He doesn't just sort of, you know, he makes you feel, I think, secure, because I was leaving home for the first time, Dave, so I was only young. He showed me around the stadium, and within a couple of hours of negotiations, it was tied up, Dave, and I then made my way down. So it was an exciting time.
And your relationship with Russell was a special one, wasn't it? He was somebody that really appreciated you as a player.
Yeah, I think so. I think with Russell, I mean, a lot of the things that they wouldn't, the fans and people wouldn't realise, is phone calls. I remember one, I had a terrible game, Dave. I can't remember. I was going after the game, but I was beating myself up about it. And he phoned me that evening, and just to set me straight and just to forget about it. He just went that extra mile, Dave, with me. And for whatever reason, I don't know, you'll have to ask him, because sometimes I was a pain to him. I used to answer back, and he used to have to put me in my place. But he was more than a manager. He was more of a... he was also a father figure. He'd help me in any walks of life. You know, it wasn't just football, but obviously football-wise, he's the only manager I've had that really gave me the license to... I mean, I always say it, but do what you want. But in respect of when we had the ball, I was able to go anywhere I wanted. As long as when we lost it, I got the shape back on the left wing, then he was happy. But, like I said, he's very special because he went that extra yard and to make sure he felt safe and the family were okay, and he'd ring my mum and dad. And, those sort of things, obviously, fans wouldn't know. But he's a long-life friend, and like I said, we're always in contact. So I'm very appreciative of what Russell did for me.
45 goals in 227 appearances. I think the first team was against Exeter, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I remember that one, yeah. And I ran over to Russ as well, because I think that was my appreciation of at Brighton. It went a bit stale. I wasn't playing, and the frustration. I remember it might have been Scotty McLeish that laid it off to me, and I remember putting it in the top corner, and I remember running straight over to Russ and thanking him for signing me and getting me back playing and enjoying my football again.
The best one, though, possibly came 2 years later at Walsall. That was special, wasn't it?
It was, Dave, yeah. I mean, to this day, I don't know why I was doing it. I remember there being a collision on the halfway line and getting past the ball and being told to kick it out. And I thought, no, I'm not going to kick it out. So I had a look, and the goalie was off his line a little bit. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to have a go here. It's one in a million sort of strike. And I remember hitting it and thinking, cool, that's a good connection. And then it sort of... time sort of stops, and it was sort of flat, and I'm thinking, God, it's got a chance, that. And then obviously it dipped in, and I think after that I didn't know what to do. I just obviously celebrated with the fans, and it's a goal that I'll obviously I always remember, and I will take that with me forever. That was a special goal, a special moment, and obviously one I'm proud of.
There were so many special goals, especially in the team that was emerging at that period.
I think with Russell, it took a bit of time, and I think, you know, with football now, Dave, you don't get a lot of time. And if Barry maybe had been a bit impatient, we may have never have experienced what we did. I think sometimes it does show that the grass isn't always greener, and sometimes it takes time to build a team. You have to make mistakes along the way. You have to realise things that work and things that don't. And, Russell got his formation. It was, for now it would be a boring 4-4-2. A bit more expansive these days. But for the squad that he had and the players that he had and the players he recruited, it was the perfect formation at the top right time. So, yeah, like I said, it took time. But, you know, there was general progress each season. And, you know, I think we missed out on the playoffs along the way. We finished seventh a couple of times. And then, obviously, the season that we really hit the ground running at Carlisle away with the 5-1 victory was a season that it all come together.
It certainly did. I can remember Russell sort of saying to me, they're a good bunch, Dave. They're a good group. And what was happening off the pitch in terms of the squad was as important to Russell as what was happening on it.
Yeah, I think that's what Russ was really good at. And again, you know, fans and people won't see on a Monday to Friday at training, you know, it sort of from day one of pre-season, you could sense there was something coming. You know, the way we were playing in pre-season, players playing at the top of their game, Dave, and doing things, you know, I mean, any chance sort of David Mooney and Kevin Lisby got were ending up in the back of the net. But on the training ground, it was just fun. Everyone was bouncing off each other. I think the togetherness, the spirit, you know, we were doing things off the pitch. We were going for meals, you know, not shy of saying it now. We did go for a few drinks, Dave. But obviously to get that camaraderie and team spirit, you have to do those sort of things. Listen, we didn't do it every week, but every sort of, you know, 2 months, it's, you know, go out as a team. And I think it just helped everyone. Everyone had a good relationship off the pitch as well as on it. And I think, you know, you spend a lot of time together on the training pitch. And, you know, if it's good on the training pitch, then you're going to, you know, take that onto the pitch. And I think that's where Russell and Kevin Nugent and Kevin Dearden, they got it spot on that season. And obviously winning games, Dave, breeds confidence. And I think, you know, we hit the ground running and we had that really that unbeaten sort of streak of games that really propelled us really into, you know, playoff candidates come the end of the season.
It did seem to be a special blend. There did seem to be players that were complementing each other and were better when they were playing with each other as results.
Yeah, I think so, Dave. I think, you know, with the 4-4-2, himself and Mo were completely different wingers. Mo would go around 5 players and stick it in the top corner. Whereas, you know, I was a bit more, I mean, you know, no disrespect to Mo, you know, when we spoke, mate, a bit more clever at coming in off the line. And just giving teams a different problem. I just think we had the right blend. And, you know, Kevin Lisby would run the channels. Then you had David Mooney coming short. You had Roman Vincelot that would break up play. And you had Lloyd James that could pick a pass wherever he wanted to put it on the pitch. And obviously at the time we had Johnny Lundstrom. And obviously he's gone on and done fantastic, Dave, at Sheffield United. And I'm over the moon for him. And obviously the back five, as you would call it, were solid as a rock.
They certainly were, and there was leadership there, wasn't there? Not least with Nathan Clark.
Absolutely, he's an inspiration, and he was a cracking crack captain. And like I said, he would lead us on and off the pitch, and he was, you know, a man mountain, along with Scotty Cuthbert, who was playing at right back, and Matthew Baldry, and Elliot Mazzuzzi. I just think it clicked, Dave, and for whatever reason. You know, starting from the team spirit, on, you know, implementing it onto the pitch was fantastic, and you couldn't wait for a match day. You just knew that we were good. There was a slight arrogance, Dave. I must admit, we were into our sort of swagger, I suppose. The younger players would say now, as I'm reaching 33, I used to say those sort of words, but that's what I would say. We were just clicking at the right time, and yeah, from Jamie Jones and goal right up to Kevin Lisby. And listen, not forgetting the bench that we had, Dave. We had, you know, Sean Battler would come off the bench. We'd have Dagnall, Robbie Simpson. We had a really tight-knit 18-man squad.
Was it enough, though? Is it one of the reasons why possibly didn't see it over the line so close, of course?
If I had one gripe, it would be with Barry. Obviously, the news, obviously, I hope he's recovering well. I saw on social media that he went down ill, and he looks like he's back to his bubbly self. Was perhaps we could have done with one more extra body or 2 days, that perhaps maybe could have given us a little bit of a chance to do a bit of rotation. You know, a lot of players have played a lot of games, a lot of minutes, and perhaps, you know, the odd time Russell could have had the option of maybe resting key players as Kevin Leasby, David Mooney or Moses or anyone in that, you know, that squad that could have been rotated and maybe saved their legs a little bit later on in the season. Perhaps, you know, hindsight's a great thing, Dave, but I do think that possibly could have helped us a little bit more, yes.
That came so close. The night that I'll never forget was at home to Peterborough United, and your goal and the celebrations that followed.
Yes, I think it was a very cagey affair. Obviously, first leg at their place, and we drew 1-1. I think that goal from Mo was crucial. We fancied ourselves against anyone at home, but in a one-off game, especially with obviously home crowd on our side. I remember walking out, Dave, and, you know, I've never heard Brisbane Road like it. I didn't think it'd be topped, but it most certainly did when I scored. Obviously, the free kick that perhaps I was in two minds, really, Dave, whether to try and get it over the wall and get it back down. But as it's so close, I thought I'm just going to get as much power and try and get it on target. But obviously, it went straight in the wall and rebounding back out, and had to react quickly to the rebound. And obviously, when it went in, Dave, I've never heard noise like it down there. And I just ran off and I lost all feeling in my body. It was a sensational feeling. And again, you know, talking about it now, I get goosebumps. It was a fantastic evening. And a fantastic game, and whatever prevailed after, we had a cracking party. And obviously, then from then on, it was obviously then go on to Wembley.
There's a goal worthy of celebration, Dean, but were you injured in the celebrations?
Yeah, I did injure my groin, Dave, and it was still hurting, I must admit, when we played at Wembley. I slid on my knees, and I think a couple of the fans jumped on board, and they leant on my knee and opened my groin out, Dave. And, I remember running back thinking, God, and obviously the adrenaline for the next sort of 10 minutes got me through, and then I was running about, and I thinking, God, I've got to come off here, and I really didn't want to come off. And I remember vividly Russ looking at me saying, you're not right, think of the final. And I said, yeah, well, we've got to get there first. And he sort of laughed, and in 5 minutes he looked at me and said, you're going to have to come off. I'm sorry. He actually said, sorry. I remember him saying, you're going to have to come off. And I said, oh, okay. And then he took me off, and obviously it was even worse watching it, Dave, from the bench the remaining minutes. But we got there in the end, and obviously the pitch invasion and what was to come was, again, something I'll never forget.
A wonderful, wonderful night. And as you say, that was a fantastic celebrations at the end. And we went off to Wembley, and it started so brightly. Did the injury have a big impact on what happened in the second half?
I think for me, I got through the first half. And again, I remember Russ coming at me at half time saying, you haven't got a lot left, have you? And I'm like, no, I haven't. I wanted to be honest because we were 2-0 up, and I didn't want to be the reason or hinder the team's results. And obviously he ended up taking me off, and we had obviously got ourselves in such a fantastic position at team. And obviously it's very hard to speak about the rest of it, Dave, but obviously what happened, and it was a gutting day. It was you put everything into that season. He had, you know, come so close. I remember crying. I got into the changing room, and you could hear a pin drop, Dave. There was, what do you say after it? I think the lads just jumped in the shower. I remember going in to see my family and crying on my mum and dad's arms. And that was it, Dave. I left Wembley on a train. I had to pop back to my flat in South Woodford, who I saw fans on the train, actually. And we were reminiscing about the season, and obviously to this day we still talk about it very fondly. And it was a really gutting day, and one where, you know, if it's gone the other way, which this is why we enjoy football, because the highs and the lows. But I still take a lot of pride in getting to Wembley, And being part of a fantastic football club, I'm including everyone in that, which supporters, directors, chairmen, managers, coaching staff, nutritionists, the physios, fitness coach. I hope I haven't missed anyone out, but everyone that was part of that season deserves a really big amount of credit. It was a fantastic year to be involved in such a very special football club.
And the supporters share that sense of pride. It was an amazing achievement. It was also a watershed, wasn't it, in terms of what happened next and, of course, the sale of the club.
Absolutely. I think, this is where I have my massive gripe, Dave, is obviously what happened with the new owner. Let's be honest, let's be very frank about it. He single-handedly ripped the heart out of the football club. It wasn't the football club that I'd known for so many years. It was very difficult to see it unravel, I must admit. Very, very hurt, and I'm still very bitter about it now.
Because you were so close to everything that happened, and particularly the way in which Russell Slade was dealt with, and so on. It was so evident that it was going wrong for a man who deserves so much more respect than he gained, than he actually...
Yeah, I think, Dave, that they obviously come in with their own agendas, and we didn't particularly start the season off too well, but no worse than any other season. My close relationship with Russell, obviously I probably knew a bit more than others, and it was hard. I probably knew it was coming the week before, Dave, if I'm honest. So I remember Russell ringing me and saying, "Look after yourself, mate. This probably will be my last game." I remember him saying that. And I also remember at Notts County away, I think we lost.
The ultimatum had been given. Had to win
correct.
The game, and it was a draw. I think I left at about 11:30 waiting for Russell, who had this long meeting with the chairman. It was just so strange and so wrong on so many levels.
I just remember, clapping the fans after the game, and I remember him hugging me. I've got a picture of it, actually, Dave, on my phone. And I remember him whispering in my ear, "Thanks ever so much for everything." I knew then. He knew, walking off that pitch, that was it. And obviously for me, it was, for someone I respected so much, it's hard to take, actually, Dave. There's no two ways about it. Very, very difficult to take. And he was very upset. And it wasn't a very good coach journey home, as you can imagine. It was very airy and very quiet, considering what had happened the season before.
And there was, I think we've said before that football's about the money, but it wasn't about money then, was it? Because there was lots of money that was being put into the club with players coming in very quickly. Did that have an unsettling impact on what was such a tight group of players?
I think so, Dave. I think nobody begrudges anyone, whatever players negotiate is obviously, that's their business, but the sort of figures that were being chucked about at that moment in time were ridiculous. And obviously, players that come into the team and didn't really make a hell of a lot of difference, if I'm being honest and frank about it. I think obviously we've worked so hard with such a structured budget through Barry. And obviously then for that to be changed, I think it unsettled the players. I think people's worth then probably was questioned, certain amounts of, two, three, four times people's salaries, Dave, is a club like Leyton Orient was silly. I think, for him to come in, the simple thing, all he had to do when he came in was sustain what he already had, perhaps give Moses Odebeju a pay rise and keep, fend off. It's easier said than done, Dave. I understand that, but fend off Brentford, keep him, and maybe just add a couple of others, Dave. I don't think there was much more else he had to do other than that. And I found it, to this day, I find it really strange the way he went about it. It was so mismanaged. It was so not calculated. It was... I hear a few people say it was sometimes like Championship Manager. It felt like we were just a bit of a joke, if I'm honest. That's how I felt, personally.
It was surreal.
It felt like it was in a movie. You just felt like you just didn't know what was going to happen next. And obviously, so much happened, Dave. It was, it obviously ended up, we got relegated, and it got very toxic during that season. And I remember doing an interview with you, actually.
Yes. After the Barnsley game.
And I remember you asking me, is it difficult to hear instructions? I mean, it was, Dave. He couldn't speak a word of English. He'd have a translator in the change room, so it was difficult to, get people motivated. And, it was very strange and something I've never had come across. And I found it very hard to deal with. And I'm a very emotional person. And, perhaps I shouldn't have said what I said in that interview. But I did want a sense of realism to give to the fans, because otherwise they wouldn't know. I think sometimes that's maybe why they appreciated me being a bit outspoken in letting them into what it was like on the training field with them.
I'm sure they did appreciate it, Dean, and they probably couldn't quite believe the amount of attention that the Orient reality show that was going on at the same time with the young Italians that were playing for a contract. It just was absolutely ridiculous. A soap opera.
Yeah, I, like I said, I think it just made us a laughing stock, Dave, really. It was embarrassing, to be honest. And I remember telling Vito at the time a private conversation. And I said, listen, I've been here many years and this is beyond a joke. This has to stop. We look ridiculous. I remember telling him, Dave, and I remember him sort of looking at me thinking, I'm not really bothered what you say, really. I was speaking through him rather than with him, if you're with me. Many a times I'd have conversations with Francesco Bichetti. I remember once he asked me to go to his house. Not many people would know this story. Probably just after Christmas, things were going really bad. So he wanted to see an experienced player. And I got a phone call to say, could I go to his house? So I got the tube down to Oxford Street. And he lived at the back of Mayfair, as it was quite well documented. And I remember going to his house, and he was asking me what I thought. I took my agent with me just in case anything was going to happen. It was a bit daunting, if I'm honest. So he said I could bring my agent. So we were sitting there, Dave, and he just asked me a few questions. And the way he spoke and the question, what's going wrong then? I remember that was his first question, Dave. What's going wrong then? And I remember saying to him, do you want the truth or do you want me to make something up? No, the truth. I said, well, you're running this club into the ground and you need to get fans back on side. You need to do things properly. You need to be informative. You need to be engaging. You need to help the manager. Don't hinder him. I mean, he used to turn up and pick the team, Dave. I think that was quite well documented, and it's true. And I remember him coming back and saying, well, I own the club, so what I do goes. I said, well, listen, you've asked me to come and see you. You've asked my honest opinion. I'm giving you it.
You were speaking truth to power, weren't you, Dean? And enough people were doing that at the time.
No, I think it was difficult. Like I said, I'm very different to other players. And listen, everyone felt the same. But I think he felt that because I'd been there so long that he might be able to somehow manipulate me into his ways. I think, Dave, was what I got from him. He used to always, silly things, we'd have a meeting at the training ground and he'd always want to speak to me after. And I'm thinking, why does he keep asking me, And then obviously, as time went on, I could tell he was trying to get me on side because he knew my relationship with the fans. I feel he felt if he could get my, I say approval, but me on side, perhaps that the fans would follow. But I love that football club. I wasn't gonna stand there and tell him lies. I was gonna tell him exactly how I felt, and it was an utter shambles. And he had to be told. And listen, he obviously didn't listen. But to this day, I'm very true to myself, and I'm glad I told him because it was. like I said, it was a horror movie, Dave. It was really horrible conditions to work in. You'd walk in and it'd be airy. If he was there, everyone would be on eggshells. A complete contrast to when, you know, if Barry turned up, he'd light up the room, Dave, with a smile and a crack a joke.
Absolutely.
And you'd want to be around him. But, you know, people couldn't wait to leave the training ground if he was there, if I'm honest. It was just very difficult time, Dave. It was very difficult.
As you say, the contrast between what happened before and, fortunately, what's come since couldn't be greater. And there are so many lessons to learn. But for you personally, Dean, it must have hurt so much.
Yeah, I think for me, the worst of it, Dave, was when I left. I mean, I've said this story many a times. We had Northampton at home. I can't remember the game. Northampton were the club that wanted me. Sorry, that's why I'm getting confused. I turned up, I was supposed to be playing, and Andy Hessenthaler, the first thing, I walked in the change room, actually, and Ada's there, and sort of gave me a funny look, and I was thinking, oh, what's wrong? So I've got in, and my shirt's not up, Dave. I'm thinking, yesterday I was in the starting 11. I've gone from that to not being in a squad, so something must be up. And I just remember Andy Hessenthaler saying, look, Cox, you need to go and speak to the chairman. I said, okay. I said, where is it? He said, oh, he's upstairs in the gallery. So I said, okay, I'll go and see him. And I remember walking in, Dave, there's a massive table and there's Vito. I can't remember what was goalkeeping coach's name at the time, Dave.
Bob Gagliani.
Yeah, he was there. And Alessandro and Francesco. All sitting at the table. So I walk in and Francesco said, I'll take a seat. I said, no, I'm all right, I'll stand. So I stood. I said, just been sent up, what? Is everything okay? And he said, no, it's not okay. We want you to leave. And I said, oh, I've only just come back from injury. I said, I've been out for 8 months with a, you know, I'm ready to go. I want to, you know. And he said, no, you've got to go. Your two options are, you go to Northampton, you sign there today, you go there straight from here, or if you stay, you will train with the youth team for the remainder of your contract, and you won't be part of the first team plans right up to the end of your contract. So obviously, you can imagine I was stunned. I couldn't believe what was been said. So I did take a seat, Dave, I must admit. I sat down and I just said, where's this all come from? No, it doesn't matter where it's come from. We don't want you here at the football club. You have to leave. And obviously, Dave, at the time, I was going through a divorce, which a lot of people don't know, but I was going through a divorce with my ex-wife. So I had a lot of stress, Dave. I was already down. And obviously, with this being thrown in, my only get out was playing football. And they were trying to take it away from me. So you can imagine the emotions. So I remember saying to them, I'm not leaving. I said, I won't be going to Northampton. I don't want to go there. So I remember them saying to me, well, okay, you need to tell us how much of your contract you want, and we will pay you to go. So I thought, okay, well, whatever. So obviously I lost my head a little bit, Dave. So I walked out of the room, composed myself, I rang my parents, and they just advised me to go home. So I got on the train, Dave, from Leighton. I get to London Bridge, and I get a call from Vito saying, can I come back? We want it sorted now. I said, no, I'm going home to my parents. I said, I'll speak to you later. And I hung up the phone, Dave. So I get on the train and get home. Just wanted to get myself away from the situation, Dave, if you're with me. So a couple of days at home. Sorry, no, not a couple of days, because it was on the transfer window. So I got home, and I remember having 6 missed calls, Dave, from Vito. They really wanted to get this done. So obviously the financials was what it was. Obviously, where they had me, Dave, is they done it after the transfer window, as you well know. So we had all agreed by 10 o'clock, but they had an hour to get the paperwork in, and obviously didn't. So again, I was then still at home. They told me they didn't want me to go to the training ground, so I couldn't even say bye to the players. So I remember just being at home, and obviously going through my divorce as well, Dave, at the time, I was in a bad place, if I'm honest. So, you know, along with my parents, they said, look, if you stay, it's going to make your life a misery. And, you know, what I was going through at the time was already hard enough. Obviously, if he'd said that I'd be involved in the first team, and, you know, I would have stayed, Dave. You know me. There's no way I would have left that football club. I really felt I was pushed against the wall, really, if I'm honest. And I had to come to the decision. And obviously, because it was after the transfer window, it put another... If I left, I obviously then couldn't sign for a club until the following January, which obviously left me in limbo. And that was, I mean, the decision, like I said, the decision of that, obviously... looking after myself financially, along with losing my football club that I absolutely adored. Literally just come back from being 9 months out, Dave, with a knee ligament injury. And obviously my divorce with my ex-wife. So it was a lot on my plate at the time. And if I'm honest, the only reason I left was because it was a less stress in my head to have to deal with. I knew I was financially okay, and I come home and I pretty much moved back with my parents, Dave, at the time, because I needed to be with someone. So it was really emotional time. I remember going to the ground. I remember crying with Ada on the pitch and saying bye, because obviously I had to go to they allowed me to the stadium because I had to sign the paperwork. Yeah, I think that was the worst day of my life that day, if I'm honest. The last walk around the pitch, where, you know, I had absolutely adored my time, and I'd give anything to play one more game on that pitch. To have that taken away, and obviously from then, Dave, obviously then I had to play. The plan was to try and find somewhere locally to help. So I went to my local team, Burgess Hill, who lived around the corner. I could play at that level, which obviously wasn't ideal, but I felt I was giving back. I was in a better place mentally. My divorce had gone through. I had got my self-esteem back. I had got my confidence back. I'd come out of the house. I mean, Dave, some days I'd just stay in and I wouldn't want to talk to anyone. It was horrible, but... I obviously then went to play there and got my enjoyment back for football, Dave. And, you know, just being out of play, not being ridiculed, not having to be called into meetings where, you know, you're scrutinised and forced out of football club. And after a month, obviously, the Crawley come in, which was absolutely ideal for me. Obviously, location-wise, the late Dermot Drummy, God rest his soul, gave me a call and I met him, and what a fantastic man. We hit it off straight away. Very, very accommodating with obviously the divorce, etc. So I started there full time in October, Dave. I wasn't getting paid. So October, November and December, they didn't, I said, look, when I can play, pay me. So from January, I was then a Crawley player.
But you had difficulties with injuries, didn't you, Dean?
Yeah. My knee was giving me a bit of jip. I mean, the 6 months that obviously Dermot was in charge, I played a lot of games, and Harry could come in with different ideas. There was no major fallout. Just went on a different system, and a system really, Dave, that I didn't really fit in, and I saw that straight away. I do also think with my sort of mental state, that sort of affected me a little bit, a run over of emotions, and I wasn't as fit as I should have been. Like I said, my mental state wasn't 100%, Dave, and I think I'm one of them people, if it's not 100%, then it does affect me. And obviously after I left Crawley, obviously I went to Eastbourne and I've enjoyed my time, and like I said, life's priority sort of changes then, where football is the be-all end-all, and it is. If I was ever to get the chance to go back, Dave, I'd snap anyone's arm off, I must be honest. But obviously having a little girl calmed me down a bit and more chilled out, and priorities change, I think. And obviously got two lovely foster boys who I love very much. I live around the corner from my mum and dad. My family are close. So I'm in a very stronger position mentally. Fitness-wise, it's probably the fittest I've been for a while, Dave. I've been doing my 5K runs to help raise money for the NHS, which my sister is on the front line. My mum's just retired, 16 years. So obviously challenging times, but I, mentally-wise, I'm in a good place now. But the regret is that it ended the way it did, Dave. You know, I pleaded with them that I could put out a nice statement or speak to someone about it, but I couldn't. It wasn't able to happen for whatever reason, Dave. It got slightly bitter on their end, which disappointed me, with obviously the statement that the club put out, which was probably the least amount they could do. You know, it was a chore for them even to put that out, I think, at the time, which was fair enough. You know, listen, football's football, Dave, as you know, and people come and go, and that was my time to go, and you know, being in a better place now is being able to talk about it. I didn't like talking about it, really, because it did affect me a lot, Dave. It was, you know, you don't ever rarely see a player play at a club for such a long time. I've never lost the buzz. I mean, I look out for their results straight away, Dave. I look at their team selection, the team formation. I'm so interlating oriented. It's unreal. I just keep tabs of everything, and you know, I was the first to celebrate and have a drink when they got promoted back to League Two. And I watch from afar very vividly, and I hope, you know, they continue to have success. I was meant to be doing my UEFA B badge, Dave, this summer, but obviously with the pandemic, I'm not sure what will happen there, but I'm looking to get on that side of it. I'd already spoken to Martin to come in and do a bit with the academy. So I'm hoping that once I pass my UEFA B that I can come in and just get some experience, Dave. It's not, I don't want anyone to get excited. It's not to, you know, get back involved or whatever, but it was just to give a bit back, because they gave me so much there. So it'd be nice to get some experience. You said I could take some training sessions, which hopefully can happen in future. And yeah, like I said, it was, it ended badly, but I never let that overriding feeling take over the mass enjoyment and friendships and experiences that I had at such a special football club.
Dean, you're very active on Twitter, and you can tell from the posts that you have that you're in a very good place, that you're enjoying the football, and more important, that you're enjoying the time with your family. And so many very good people were treated so very, very badly.
I'm not preaching. There was so many that, you know, that have got a story, and I hope that every one of them are in a good place and enjoying themselves now. I mean, the football club looks like it's been reunited, and Justin Edinburgh did such a fantastic job of rebuilding and getting them up. And I didn't know him personally, Dave, but he looked a fantastic manager, and the players really, you know, responded to him and respected him. And thoughts are with his family. I bet it's a difficult time for him at the moment without him, and high praise for him, and he's left a legacy there, Dave, that will never disappear. It's he's a set in stone there. He's done a fantastic job when he was manager.
Certainly did. It's so important to see Leighton Orient back into the Football League. And Dean, you know more than anybody that it is a very special football club. And the faithful, they have their favourites. And you're right up there, you know. There are some great players that have played for the O's over the many years. I remember the likes of Laurie Cunningham. And, of course, you go through all the great heroes of all generations, Dean. But you have a very, very special place in the hearts of the Orient faithful. And they'll look back on those glorious days, that wonderful night, and the victory and the celebrations to get to Wembley. And although, of of course, it was heartache. That was all part of the late night story, isn't it, Dean? It wouldn't be the O's if it was done the easy way.
No. We have a habit of doing things difficultly, Dave, don't we? We're not very straightforward in that respect, but we wouldn't change it for the world. It's, like I said, it's a club that will always live with me in a very, very high regard. And I am... Like I said, I'll forever be looking at their results, and I hope, you know, they can gain as many promotions as they can and have as much success as they can, because the fans deserve it, because they are a very, very loyal bunch. They stick with you through thick and thin, and, you know, to get through what they have and come out the other side, Dave, and now be enjoying good times, you know, it's nothing short of what they deserve.
And the fact that many of them come down to see you at Eastbourne, don't they, when they get the chance, just demonstrates the affection that you still have in their hearts. And Dean, it's been a real pleasure and privilege to catch up with you again. And can I say a sort of personal thank you? Because particularly in those dark days, Dean, you were one of the few players that did stand up and explain to supporters via the media about what was happening. And, you know, thank you so much for doing that, and thank you for all those treasured memories. We'll never forget everybody that was fortunate enough to be there at Walsall, that amazing goal. So many wonderful goals over your glorious years in E10. Thank you, Dean, and good luck for the future.
Thanks, Dave. You look after yourself. Thanks, mate.
Good luck, Dean. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.